Case 23 from the Mumen Khan. Hui Neng, neither good nor evil. The sixth ancestor was pursued by Ming, the head monk, as far as Taiyu Peak. The teacher, seeing Ming coming, laid the robe and bowl on a rock and said, "This robe represents the Dharma. There should be no fighting over it. You may take it back with you." Ming tried to lift it up, but it was as immovable as a mountain. Shivering and trembling, he said, "I came for the Dharma, not the robe. I beg you, lay brother, please open the way for me." The teacher said, "Don't think good, don't think evil. At this very moment, what is the original face of Ming, the head monk?" In that instant, Ming had great satori. Sweat ran from his entire body. In tears, he made his bows, saying, "Besides these secret words and secret meanings, is there anything of further significance?" The teacher said, "What I have just conveyed to you is not secret. If you reflect on your own face, whatever is secret will be right there with you." Ming said, "Though I practiced with Huang Mei with the assembly, I could not truly realize my original face. Now, thanks to your pointed instruction, I am like someone who drinks water and knows personally whether it is cold or warm. Lay brother, you are now my teacher." The teacher said, "If you say that, then let us both call Huang Mei our teacher. Maintain your realization carefully." So here we are, the end of our second full day of our Anga, our practice period. Delving into these koan stories, and of course delving into the koan of our life, the koan of each breath. All of us here on this boat headed out to sea, so whether this is your first visit here or whether you've been here from the beginning, makes little difference. But here we are, and this is story time. We were asked to pick some koan that had a special significance to us, and this is one of the first stories I remember when I began my Zen practice many years ago now. And this is a story comes from the Platform Sutra and concerns Wei Neng, who was one of our ancestors. And in fact, all Zen lineages trace back through Wei Neng. We revere him in our chanting service with Bodhidharma and Wei Neng, the two ancestors in China that we call out. But this story begins in the middle of the story of the transmission, this transmission to the sixth ancestor, Wei Neng. And the story goes briefly that he was an uneducated peasant from the south of China happened to be gathering wood and heard a fragment of a sutra, heard someone chanting, and suddenly his mind was awakened. And he knew nothing of this sutra, and so he asked the monk, and he said, "Well, I come from this great teacher, Huang Mei." And so Hui Neng carefully found someone to look after his widowed mother and set off and came to the great temple of Huang Mei. And in these days in China, the temples were quite grand affairs. You'd have 500 or 1,000 monks living together. And he came and got an audience with the great teacher himself, had an interchange. The teacher saw some promise in him, so he sent him to the rice threshing department. I guess that's the high class department. But he bided his time there and stayed working in this lowly, basically support service. He wasn't even really a monk. The Huang Mei, the story goes, was then realizing he needed to find a Dharma heir, someone to pass the Dharma on to, and so he asked people to write poems. And there was a famous poem written by his assistant, the head monk, not Ming, but another one. Quite a lovely poem, and then this poem was surpassed by Hui Neng. And so in the middle of the night, the teacher met with Hui Neng and said, "You are my true Dharma heir. I'm going to give you the robe and bowl." But he said, "There's just one problem. People might be a little upset when they find out that it's you. So I will take you across the river, take you to the other shore, and then you should go off and hide for the next 10 years. Quite a transmission to receive from your teacher. Here's the robe and bowl, but get out of town." Because he said all of the monks will be angry, and indeed the story goes they were angry. And so the whole monastery is up at arms and takes off to get this the robe and the bowl back. And here's to me where the story gets most interesting, because Hui Neng had quite a head start. So he was way ahead, and the monks pursued him, not just for days, but for weeks and even months. But little by little, the monks grew tired or discouraged or decided it wasn't worth the effort or who cares, and they all gradually drifted back to the monastery. Except this one monk, Monk Ming. It's said that he had been a general in the army and had retired to live in the monastery. And he was a monk of great determination and great endurance. And so he pursued relentlessly. Everyone else had given up, but Monk Ming went on and on until finally we reached the place where the koan begins at Dayu Pass, where Hui Neng turns. He can run no longer, puts down the robe and the bowl, and says, "These cannot be fought over. Take them if you must." For me, as I heard this story as a young Zen student, I was so taken by this monk Ming and by his energetic pursuit. It does seem to me that if we are walking this path, if we do indeed want to wake up, that we need to give our heart to this enterprise. We need to be wholehearted in our practice. This Monk Ming was wholehearted in his practice wholehearted in his determination. and from one sense, utterly mistaken. So in this story, Hui Neng is indeed the true Dharma heir. Monk Ming is that part of us that is full of righteous indignation. We know that this should not be happening. And he was willing to follow the courage of his conviction all the way up to this quite dramatic scene at Dayu Peak. And in this scene, when Hui Neng turns and puts the robe and the bowl down, Monk Ming, who is must have been exhausted, must have taken everything he had to get there. He goes to pick up what he has been working so hard, 2 months, no stopping, on and on, relentless, relentless, chasing, chasing. He goes to pick up what he thought he came for, and he cannot pick it up. And his wonderful words, I came for the Dharma, not the robe. Please teach me. Please open the way to me. And to me, this moment of realizing how utterly mistaken he was, is a moment that has inspired me for so many years. And in this moment, in the moment of his true failure, realizing that what he thought he wanted, what he thought he was getting, was not it. And picking up on this theme that Josh started last night of the idea that we can have no conception of what we're really doing here. Or we might say any conception we have is not it. This awakening or this enlightenment, satori, this waking up to ourselves. We all have some image of what it might be. As Melissa was saying this morning, we might think it's to be able to walk on water and to be unmoved by the winds of praise and blame, fame and fortune. But the real miracle, the real blessing, cannot be contained by any idea. We say even Buddhism is a dream. And all of these stories, all of these teachings are only to point us toward our own heart. We temporarily use the words Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. But these words and these stories point toward something that is ungraspable. And yet we have to start out. We have to start where we are. And where we are is always limited, always seeing only part of the whole story. And the reading we did, it's by Shohaku Okamura. No matter how hard we practice, our motivation for practice is always based on in some amount of self-centeredness. The act of truly seeing this self-centeredness is itself Buddha. To awaken to the reality of our delusion is itself Buddha. All of us would like to have pure intention, but there is no such thing as pure intention. But we can have some intention. We can turn toward what we love. The great encouraging part of the story of Monk Ming is that all along he was wrong, and it made no difference. And that the entry point, so he says, he finally gets there and finally realizes it's not the robe and the bowl. It's not whatever image I have of awakening. It's not something else. And in this dying of what he thought, when his opinion is taken away from him, when he is so exhausted, when he has tried everything, finally there, and cannot lift up this robe and bowl. In that moment, he is opened up. And Hui Neng says, thinking neither good nor evil. Before thinking about the Dharma, before wanting or not wanting, what is the original face of Monk Ming? Before thinking of Ango or not Ango, who is it that is breathing in and out on your cushion? Who is the one that formed the intention to come? Who is the one that rode in the train that drove the car that cleared your calendar? This one who functions all the time. We say the effortless functioning of Dharma. Doesn't matter. We don't have to worry about whether we are doing it for the right reasons. Because, of course, we're not. All of us operating from some limited perspective. And this limited perspective goes on endlessly. And the story goes on, and Monk Ming has a wonderful satori. He opens up to the reality of his life. He opens up to the fact that when the light shines on the floor, it comes up and meets our eyes. He woke to the fact that he has never been separate from all that he has longed for. So he wakes up to this, as all of us do, to some degree. So easy when we hear these stories to then create another dream. Oh, so it's not the robe and the bowl, but I want to have that kind of awakening. And once I have that kind of awakening, then everything will be different. So the mind just creates one image after the other. And the encouragement of Monk Ming is to forge ahead in whatever way makes sense to us, I don't think there is only one way. Each one of us has to determine for ourselves what is the way that leads to our heart. How do you want to spend your life energy? All of us here this evening have chosen this very simple and subtle practice of sitting still, of being with our breath, of being ourselves. So this is what I encourage us to give ourselves to in this moment. Whether you're just here for the evening or for longer makes no difference. Here we are, and the possibility right now is to give our hearts. Give our hearts to this moment, to allow ourselves to be as we are. And the teaching of Monk Ming is that if we do this, we will encounter something. And whatever this is in this encounter, we've been quoting James Ford, our fellow guiding teacher, a lot, the lovely title of his book, If You're Lucky, Your Heart Will Break. So as we walk forward, if we're lucky, our heart will break, and we will lose who we thought we were, lose what we think we came for. But only through dedicating ourselves to this simple practice. This is not about thinking our way in, but being present breath after breath, a moment after moment, to the possibility that this place is Dayu Peak, and that what we really want is right here before us. Thank you. So I invite you to sit comfortably. We'll now have our Dharma dialogue. And this is the opportunity to ask questions or share experiences relative to what I say or what's happening in your practice. Your experience.
Yeah. I am very drawn to many forms of meditation recently, and all of them are speaking to me in great ways. I feel very blessed to have been introduced to this temple recently and just became a member last night. This is my fourth time back, and I'm finding it just speaking to me in very miraculous ways. I have bipolar, and so it's helping me with that as well in a big way. Recently, very manic symptoms and that, and Jesus is showing me that, the answers. Giving me the answers, and it's been phenomenal. And I just feel blessed every day. And last night was the third visit here, and it really fed me in a wonderful way, more so than the first two by far. Really, it really connected with last night. Great. Very much so. Great. And I was drawn back tonight.
Good. We're so glad to have you, and this is our hope as we come together, that each one of us will meet something that speaks to us. And I think if we come with this kind of heart that you clearly have, then we can receive what's here. So glad you're here with us. Thank you.
So you know, there's a part of this particular koan that I find really funny. You know, it's like, you know, here's Ming, he catches him, and you know, he has this great sistori, and then he has to ask, you know, is there anything else? It's a beautiful moment.
It's a beautiful moment.
You want more?
and it's really human, right? I mean, this is what happens to all of us. This great moment, everything drops away, and then you go, okay, so that's already in the past.
Yeah, right.
And now what?
Right.
Is there more? I love that.
Yeah. Something, to me, very funny, but also very, you know, right on.
Well, and wonderful too of this demonstration of life going on. So it says great satori. That's the big cheese, right? That's the brass ring, right? And so here's a story about the guy who gets it, and still immediately, is there more?
And the line at the end too, and Wei Nan gives him advice. He says, maintain your realization carefully. You know, that it's not like, okay.
Yeah, right.
No, this is lifelong stuff. This is never going to end. Yeah, very, very. Yeah, there all the language that's like come down to us in as the koan.
Yeah.
Very pointed that way.
Yeah, it does beg the question: What happened to me? I mean, I know that no one really probably knows.
Well, actually, the historians and scholars looking at this see pretty clearly that this story has been constructed, that this great exemplar of the Buddhist tradition, apparently no one who studies that and looks at the evidence thinks that he really existed in this way. There might have been someone named this. But this story was written about 150 years after the fact, so it's supposed to be around the 7th century, in the 7th century. It was written first in the 9th century. And there's one historian, Buddhist historian, who says that the stories that come down, the more detail they have, probably the less accurate they are, and the more important they are. So there's something that's being caught here that has been so... caught something that has been so essential to this tradition that we're a part of. And at first I was quite disappointed when I found out that, you know, this probably didn't occur in this way. And there's quite a wonderful, some writing about this by a guy named Alan Cole, who talks about the political dimensions and who was trying to prove that he had the true transmission. And so he makes up this story that his teacher did this, you know. So it's all of this, and yet there's something in the story that speaks to us, you know, hundreds, thousands of years later. So I think Monk Ming is sitting right over there.
Ming the Merciless.
Ming the Merciless. Well, and you know, I think it's tempting because of the way we were raised and educated to go into these koans as if we were reading historical documents. They're not historical documents. They're meant to be inspirational. And so, in a sense, it doesn't really matter whether these people ever existed. And you know, the one thing that we knew early on, even before people started really doing a lot of research, was that the other guy, the guy who lost the poetry contest, became a great Zen master, had many, many disciples. A whole school of Zen was begun by him. So it did die out. So, you know, the winners write the history. But many generations later. So he was a very important person.
Yeah, okay.
One thing I love the story too, and but one that has a thing has always made me wonder is the fifth patriarch. So he makes this decision, but he can't, like, he can't just show up the next morning and be like, "Sorry, everybody, I gave transmission to the guy in the rice threshing room, and you just have to deal with it." And apparently, he, you know, like, they're like, "You did what?" And knock him out of the way as they go rushing off for the robe and the bowl. Which one makes me think that the robe and the bowl must have been perceived to have magic power, which I think is true. And then, but it's just sort of an interesting, like, it's out of the teacher's hands now or something like that.
If you look closely at the story, there are lots of holes in it. It purports to make sense, but there are lots of things that don't, like the teacher is going to have a poetry contest to decide who to give transmission to.
And Wei Nung was illiterate, so he doesn't even, he can't read the poem that's written on the wall by the other guy, and he has to ask somebody else to read it to him, and then he has somebody write it up there. Yeah. But, you know, in my fantasy version of this story, that totally makes sense the next morning, you know, where he comes out and he says, Wang Mei says, "So, you know, I just want you all to know that I gave..." And everybody goes, what? I mean, how many times? That happens a lot. You know, you can't control a congregation, right? They have their own opinions. What? So I love that. But I love that, you know, then the monastery empties out. Everybody's running, and they have to all cross the river, and then they have to all...
It's like it's a mad.
It'd be great to see the movie of this. But I think, Melissa, as you say, what strikes me as true is how we react. And so here in Boundless Way, we have different positions. You know, are you a practice leader or a Dharma teacher or a senior Dharma teacher? And someone gets named or someone gets transmission. And there's a little bit like, you know, we have feelings about that. Like, oh, well, that was a good choice, but why can't? Why did you know pick David? You know, and this arises in any community, and this issue of who's recognized in particular ways and who's not, and so I think the truth of that is that there is reactiveness and of some sort in the human condition. I love how hot the reactiveness is too. I feel like that sometimes. You know, how dare you do that?
And why not me?
Yeah, yeah.
And
right.
these are Zen students. If you have any delusions about the calmness of Zen students.
Yeah.
And I think this ties into what you were saying, David. That possibly that this is all made up, and the more detail, the more important it is, that pointing to something. So Hui Nan is illiterate, so maybe that's pointing towards, you know, outside of, you know, scholarly. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily
right.
Attained through, you know, reading and
right.
thinking.
Yeah.
And same with the, you know, the monks chasing after him. I mean, it's greed, right? I mean, it's always there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I can identify with running out the door, chasing down something I want. You know? So I can see that as, sounds crazy, but you know, like you said, pointers to the things that happen in my life all the time.
John and then Steve.
I was just, you know, struck by, like, the at the end he says, like, you know, maintain the realization, and it's, you know, like, just the word maintain, it's not like hold, it's not, you know, grasp, it's maintain. So that conveys to me that you're not holding onto it fast, but it's there, it's not that grasping, it's not that, you know, it's because if you grasp something, if you hold on to it, it's going to just kind of like slip away. You know, maintaining it, it's almost like you're kind of like, you know, maintaining, you know, like the flow of something, you know, as opposed to just trying to like own it, you know. So maintain doesn't to me is a much more it doesn't have that ownership, you know, to it. It's like you're maintaining it as opposed to like grabbing it.
Yeah, I think I agree.
Thanks. Yeah.
Thank you.
So to kind of follow up on something that Aaron was saying, it strikes me as being really kind of cool that we have stories like this that appear to be sort of made up, you know. So there's like maybe half a dozen things that the important teachers of the day thought, you know, they really wanted to tell people, you know, and they put it together into this story, you know, the illiterate thing, like Aaron was, you know, so it doesn't depend on words and letters and great understanding and you know, wholeheartedly chasing and all these different things that they wanted to transmit to the students at the time by making up a story. And that, you know, sure, you can poke holes in it if you want, but that isn't really the point. You know, it's not, at least the way we take it. We don't take it as being a historical thing that has to, you know, every little detail has to hold together. It's these themes, these points that people wanted to transmit to Zen students that are the important thing in it. And it's really clear in a story like this, I think, of, you know, about how, like you were saying, you know, we chase and chase and chase and create determination. And then the point that really I love about it is, I mean, there's so many different reactions that Min could have had, you know, when he failed. I mean, he could have just beat the hell out of Wei Nan.
And for instance, right?
That's, you know, kind of the way I came all this way. And but it's so beautiful that he is kind of teachable in that moment, you know. He's willing to set aside this great chase and say, oh my God, you know, I really have no idea about the Dharma, and maybe you do, you know, and how cool that is, you know. It really is kind of a nice story, and it makes these wonderful points, and it just kind of thrills me that we don't have to look at it like some delivered truth or some you know, story of, you know, it's these are things that we're trying to teach people, and we made up a story because it helps us teach them. And isn't that a wonderful thing, a way to look at it, you know?
Yeah.
This is a teaching story. We don't claim that it's necessarily historically true.
Right.
Yeah. Well, even all history is historic, just a bunch of stories.
It's not historically true.
No, really, this happens.
Right. There is this pretense that we don't necessarily have to maintain, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And there's freedom in not having to maintain that.
Right.
You know, I was going to talk about this tomorrow. We didn't talk to you. You beat me to it. And I tried to lift the book, and I was in tears. But one of the things that, when I was reflecting on it, and David gave pretty much the talk I was going to give, so I feel really awful.
It was our talk.
It was, oh, really? Communion. But when I first heard this story, because we heard it about the same time in our Zen career, and we were so inspired, and, you know, and to be Ming. I mean, I was Ming. I really wanted to be the guy who just kept going, and of course I was, because I was so foolish. You know, I thought I was going for this, when what I really got was that, and it was not what I imagined it was. But then, as the years have gone by, I've really come to identify with Wei Nung instead. Just like, you know, nobody thinks I should be a teacher, but my teacher believes in me, but he's ferrying me across the river, which is very touching to me, and then I have to leave, I have to escape, and, you know, and so I have to actually come to some, this is, I think, the other side of the story, come to, what is the Roban bowl, what is the transmission, you know, what is it for me? It doesn't look like, you know, as a woman, it's like an illiterate person, I don't fit the description of a Zen master. You know, so it's perfect story for me. There's some kind of maintaining and kindness, incredible kindness at this. Ming was a general. You know, that's again the important detail in the fictional story, that he was a general, a retired general. So he was big and strong, and he could have beaten the hell out of Wei Nung. You're probably right, and he didn't. He exhausted himself, and they met in that moment of almost mutual recognition that all the forms of practice are not what's important, but this whoa, not knowing. They meet in not knowing. And to me, that's just like such a beautiful moment when you can't lift it. You know, that, and then there's that series of beautiful moments. Now what?
And Wei Neng's courage to teach. Like,
yes.
You know, yeah. Like in that moment to teach.
Yeah. And also to me, you know, again, I identify with this, you know, now you're my teacher. Oh, boy. Well, no, cool it. You know, Wang Mei is our teacher. There's some kind of a beautiful moment there where he doesn't take on the adulation that suddenly Ming has for him.
Well, and Wei Neng gets this starts when he gives up.
Yes,
Wei
Neng, they both give up.
You know, has been, they're going to get me. Yeah. They're going to get me. They're going to get me. And finally...
He puts it on the...
Yeah, yeah. This can't be fought of.
And Chris is right. You know, that this was Bodhidharma's robe that he wore and his begging bowl that had been passed along 6 generations. So it probably did seem really, really special. Yeah.
Eva,
Well, I was struck by 2 things. One was that I was thinking that the reason Ming couldn't lift the bowl was because there's a divine higher power that he wasn't qualified. That's why he couldn't lift it.
Mm-hmm.
And that maybe that made him realize he was not qualified. And then the other thing was that Wei Neng showed that he was the true Dharma heir because he was willing to give up. He was not willing to divide up the Sangha for the sake of it. And so he showed that he truly was the true Dharma heir.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then in the end, he said, oh, he's not saying that he's the teacher. He said, we're both students of our master.
Yeah.
You know, so he's very humble.
Yeah, quite something that way.
And it's kind of touching.
Yeah.
Yeah. A demonstration.
I really wasn't familiar with the koan at all, and they're really speaking to me in a great way. You speak of the fact that, you know, they're fictional stories that are making very profound points, and I just look at the Bible and Jesus as parables,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, being very parallel to the koan, and
right.
They're speaking to me in a great way. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and this is human beings convey... meaning through stories, and every religious tradition tries to convey something that can't be spoken of directly, and so we use stories and feel the aliveness. So stories from the Bible, stories from Zen, touch our hearts right now. Yeah,
and it's kind of like what Steve was saying. You know, the parables in the Bible are saying the same few teachings over and over, but they're trying all these different ways of coming into it. And the koans are just the same. You know, in this task we've set ourselves for Ango, of coming up with koan stories for, you know, the next 3 weeks. I think we're going to start. We already have seen that. We've heard 3 koans so far, and the similarity of theme is very strong in all of them. So.
Well, let's sit again for a few moments and then...